That song came out of Romans 12, 1. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to present your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. For this is your spiritual act of worship. And so there's a sense that we worship God, obviously, in song, as we just did. But even our lives can be a form of worship to God. And so it's interesting to think about that the way we relate to each other, the way we forgive, the way we serve, the way we love can be a form of worship to God. And so I love, a lot of times Todd will close with, have a great week of worship. And so we can think about that we worship not only on Sunday mornings or only in here for a few minutes, but even just the way we live our lives is worship. It's a great thought to kind of start off tonight. So I am fresh off the plane from Haiti with my family, my wife and I, and our 11-year-old son and 9-year-old daughter went to a place called Mission of Hope, which is just outside of Port-au-Prince, Haiti, with about 45 other folks from Watermark, most, all of them parents with children. So we had all the way down to 7 years old, up to about 16 in Haiti. And it was a great experience, as you can imagine. Obviously, very, very difficult coming back. Was probably the hardest. We were stuck in traffic in Port-au-Prince. And so if you guys have been there or any kind of third world place like that, you know there's no waste disposal system other than to heap it up on the side of the road and burn it, right? And so we're just walking in or driving in. You know, the city's on fire behind all these buses stacked up that are spewing diesel fumes. And my wife and I were in the back, and she took the brunt of that thing. And just all flight, both flights home, just puking her guts out, you know? And when you get home and the guy at customs says, well, welcome home, you know, that was a welcome thought for us. But I was slated to speak about that kind of expectations tonight, which is obviously incredibly important in our marriage. But I thought, you know, just some of the stuff that's still kind of half-baked in my head and my heart, kind of coming off the heels of that trip, that we would just kind of talk about some of that. I just kind of let you know some of the things that are still rattling around in my head and my heart, and some of them which I think will have direct application to our marriages. Okay, so five thoughts that I just was kind of journaling and thinking about. You know, somebody said you always use list when you speak. So if you're terrible, people will know just how long they have to endure it. Okay, so 5 points here. These are just kind of the five things that I was thinking about while I was there. Okay, number one, man, we are blessed, right? That's just the obvious. And I had the thought even before we landed. And so we did this epic garage sale to raise money. I mean, this thing was strung out all over our lawn. We had at times probably 40, 50 folks out there, you know, and I was just like, I felt like I was on the New York Stock Exchange, you know, just taking orders and bids, and I just had this wad of cash, and it was a ton of fun. And so some folks donated a lot of stuff to us, a lot of our friends, a lot of friends of friends. And so kind of the way that would roll was people would come up in their, you know, their real new SUVs, and they'd pop the trunk, and they would just start unloading all this stuff from their house, right? It was boxes, generally about 6 boxes and some random piece of furniture. That's what they gave us, which we were really grateful for. We were able to monetize and kind of, you know, finish out the rest of our trip. But when I was there in Haiti, I thought, you know, that's probably about a year or two worth of excess stuff for most of us. We went through our house and that was roughly what we had, you know, 6 boxes and a couple, you know, odd pieces of furniture that we weren't using anymore. And just to be there and go, you know, in the life of a Haitian family, they will never have that much stuff in their life. They'll never have 6 boxes of stuff and a couple random pieces of furniture. And that's what didn't get thrown away for most of us in 2 or 3 years, and that we didn't want in our house, you know. And I just thought, man, how blessed are we? And even to think about how materialistic we are, and how we've been infected in ways I don't even think we're beginning to understand, you know? And I know you guys aren't materialistic. I'm not. When we think about materialistic people, it's always someone else, right? It's the guy that lives in the zip code or the subdivision that's one notch higher than you. But I know you guys aren't materialistic, and I know I'm not. But you know, what's crazy is that, so you guys, I mean, this is really crazy, but in the United States, there's people that have more than one car. It's crazy. I mean, there's some materialistic people. They've got more than one car. And, two, some even more. It's not you guys, but there's other people. And what's even crazier is they build houses. They live in houses, and then they build houses for their cars. Can you believe that? So most people in Haiti, especially after the earthquake, they're living in kind of 6x6 little tarp huts. But people in America will build homes for their cars because they don't want their cars to be out in the element. And and oftentimes they're pretty big. And some people, this is really, you guys will be blown away by this. Some people have houses so big for their cars they can fit two cars in there. Isn't that amazing, right? And we are. We are blessed, and we are materialistic in ways. I just don't think we begin to understand. And, I started to kind of peel the layers back in my heart and just go, God, where's the line in all this? And what do you want me to do to respond to you? And it's hard. I don't know the answer, so I'm not going to give it to you. But I just know that God's kind of stirring in my heart that at a minimum, that stuff is too important to me. And again, I don't think of it as my problem. I think of it as someone else's, but it is. And I'm more materialistic than I think I am, and I need to think about being generous, right? And that is what 2 Corinthians chapter 9 is all about, that God gives us so that we can be generous. That's why He gives us stuff. And talking to one of the pastors, he said, we don't teach a prosperity gospel to our people, but we do tell them that when they give and when they're generous, their needs are always met. It's all we've ever known here in Haiti. And I thought, you know what? I could take and use some more of that in my life. So it was great for my kids to see, kids who couldn't even have clothes, which is always, if you're an 11-year-old boy, to see little boys running around and with no clothes on is always really funny and awkward to deal with. So there was lots of snickers and little jokes between the young boys. But it was just really great for us to remember that we are blessed. And all of us are, right? All of us are blessed in ways that we really, I don't think we get our arms around, and we don't stop to say thanks for. Second thing was that I need to put myself in positions where I need God to show up, right? And so a verse I talked with my family through one morning was 2 Corinthians 1:9, and it says that these things happened so that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God. And so I just asked the question to our family. I said, hey, where are we in positions as a family that we've got to rely on God? Where if God doesn't show up, we're toast. And so I just threw it out there and just to see what was said. And it was nothing but Haitian crickets, man. My family couldn't think of one thing that if God doesn't come through today, we're toast, right? And we could see some of the temporary homes over there on the side, and we just talked through what it might be like to be one of them, to not know when or if your kids could go to school, where your next meal is going to come from. We had this huge deluge one night, and we thought, man, what would that be like to be in that, being a tarp on the side of a hill with this torrential downpour coming through, And they're just in a place where they're dependent upon God, that quite frankly, I'm not. But I think I need to be. And I also met some folks who were just, they had a ton of joy because they put themselves in like crazy positions where God had to come through. There was young couples there at the mission. This one couple in particular, 26 years old, has accepted. He's got an MBA. He's going to go get his MBA at Stanford. He's accepted, deferred his enrollment so he could just kind of hang out there and live in this little shack in Haiti. He knows Creole and he's just spending time with these people. And he told some unbelievable stories. Like my kids were just sitting there with their jaws, just dropped. I couldn't believe it. They told during the earthquake, one of them came back to the United States, got $40,000 in cash, strapped it to his vest, went to Dominican. The UN helicopter brought him in, and the rest of their friends drove a convoy of food through the streets of Port-au-Prince, just passing out food when other people were getting killed. I mean, just like all this craziness, And there was so much joy and so much excitement in their life, because they were in places where God had to come through. And so I don't know if you guys are any different than me, but I just felt so insulated from ever needing God outside of my salvation. And so just, asking the question with our family, hey, God, what would it look like for us to be dependent on you and kind of know that joy? So a third one is just to take every advantage of every opportunity. And there were some opportunities Pam and I felt like we did a great job with some that my kids felt like they did a great job with, and some we missed. That we could have done more. We could have taken more advantage of the time there. So we were there 5 days, and we're hopping on the plane going, I cannot believe it was that fast. And I have a sense we'll do the same when we're 70 or 80 and just go, yeah, man, I would love to go back and do that one again. And we've got to take every advantage. And we have no idea. The other thing that struck me was we have no idea where our faithfulness and our interactions will lead to, what the ripple effects will be. So I'm there one night, and this girl, this little staff member, comes up to me. It's a girl I had grilled all throughout, not grilled, I'd asked questions all throughout the week about how the mission worked. And she came up to me on the last night with tears in her eyes. And so maybe this says more about my communication style than anything else, but I assume if someone comes up to me with tears in their eyes and they say, hey, can I talk, that I've offended them or really, really frustrated with them. And so she said, hey, can we talk? And I said, yes. I said, I'm so sorry about the questions. And she goes, oh, no, it's not about that. I was like, phew. So I immediately thought what else I could have done to offend her. And it was nothing that I had done. She said, hey, I want you to know that you don't really know who I am. I knew her name, but she said, your younger brother was my youth pastor all growing up. And he, he marked my life. The net of it is I wouldn't be here trying to serve God if it hadn't been for your brother. And I know the story of how your brother came to Christ, that when he was 12, you were 16, and you took him back to your bedroom and you shared Christ with him. And he talks about the ways you discipled him all through junior high and high school. And I just want to tell you thanks. For taking, every opportunity with your brother. And I just thought, yeah. So just a heart that's so full. My brother's one of the godliest guys I know, and just longing for what opportunities did I miss this week? Right? What other stories did I miss out on in heaven because I didn't take every opportunity? And so life is short. Psalm 90 tells us that we've got 70 or 80 years if we're lucky, and we need to learn to number our days aright. And I was just struck by that. And so it's the same thing with your marriage, that we don't just think that we're going to get to that hard conversation, that we're going to deal with that issue down the road. We need to deal with it now. We're not going to disciple our kids at a later date. We need to do so now. We're not going to ask for forgiveness later. We need to do it now. And our coworkers that need Christ, we can reach out to them now and take every advantage of that. So I'm just really convicted coming back that I need to do a better job taking advantage every opportunity. Okay. Fourth one was that I can't control and let my joy be dictated by others. And it was funny that I would have to go to Haiti to be reminded of that. So there were times we'd go out and work in this this little village, and they were building some homes. It was a great story. They're building some little two-bedroom homes for these folks who just completely wiped out, with the earthquake. Going to charge them $10 a month for 5 years, and then give them the home. So I have an ownership mentality. Really, really cool plan. And so we're out there just kind of working alongside of these guys, painting, moving bricks, those kind of things. And my son, he is getting after it. We're supposed to move these bricks, and these bricks are no joke. There's like these big cinder block things, and all the dads are like, oh, my traps, my shoulders, my forearms, they're all whining. And my son's over there just busting it, moving them from one pile to the other. I was like, that is my boy. And when he got done, he went over there and initiated with some other kids, and he was playing with them, And so I remember just writing in my journal, I'm so proud of my son, all this kind of stuff, told him. And so that was day two, and by day four, he was wasted. He was so stinking tired, and he was emotional. We go out to this village, and we share the gospel, had this really cool opportunity, and we're playing slaps with these kids, and they lit him up. So you put your hands on there, and you do this, right? And so, I was watching, and some of them were working me over, but the tops of his hands were just all red. They're all just all totally red. And I saw him over there just standing. He was just kind of doing this with his back to the kids. And I said, hey, bud, let's get in here and initiate. We're only going to be here another 30 minutes. And he goes, I'm done, Dad. I'm done. Those kids are mean, and I'm not going over there. I was so frustrated. I'm like, well, there's other families. Here's my son. They're engaging. He's not. What are they going to think of me, and I'm frustrated at him, and something else happened that night, And I was just reminded, some of that is, as a dad, I need to engage with him and shepherd him through, but so much of it was, how I'm doing on this trip is based on my son's performance or not. And that's wrong, right? I can't wait for Dawson to make me happy. I can't wait for his actions to dictate whether I'm in a good mood or I have deep joy. Okay, I can rejoice when he's doing things that make me proud as a dad and that bring honor and glory to Christ. But when he doesn't, I don't have to get spun up and be just angry at him or short with him. And I think the same applies to us in marriage, right? We have needs that can be met by our husband or by our wife in Genesis 2. It's not good for a man to be alone. Okay, so there's something that's a completing nature to the whole marriage relationship and to our spouse. But it's Christ who is to meet all our needs according to His glorious riches, right? Not our spouse. And so if I get spun up because of what Dawson does or doesn't do, or I get bent out of shape because of what my wife does or doesn't do, the way she meets my needs or not, then something is amiss in my relationship with Christ, right? I need to be completed by her, but she's not ultimately the one to meet all my needs. Christ is. And so I needed to be reminded of that when I went to Haiti and had some great conversations with my son after that and just learning how to shepherd and love him. You know, he's an emotional guy and I'm a thinker. So you ask me how I'm feeling and it's like hungry or tired or rested, right? Those are like my feeling verbs. And he's just not that way. And so learning how to shepherd and love him it's been a great challenge and a great joy, but also really good to reveal stuff in my heart. Okay, so we can't let others dictate our joy. Okay, and then lastly, this may have been my biggest takeaway, was that everything rises and falls on leadership. And I hate overstatement, I hate hyperbole, right? I'm just not given to that. But everything rises and falls on leadership. And so as we would go, we'd drive around Haiti, you know, there's just stuff that's broken everywhere, right? Roads that are messed up, buildings that are down, you know, the trash would be one example. And so our kids are like, well, someone just needs to fix it. You know, someone needs to do something about this. And we're like, yeah, but no one will, right? No, and at least no one on the short term anyway. We have a string of, you know, self-absorbed dictators or, you know, despots that run a country. Everything tends to be broken. And so not everything is their fault, but they're responsible for it. And the lack of leadership in that country is so ridiculously apparent. And it's the same thing in our families. And so I was just reminded that I saw a nation that was just devastated. But some things circumstantially, but a lot just kind of systemically. It was a lack of leadership, and it's the same thing in our families. And so, guys, it's just a good challenge to us. I just thought, what is it about my family that's a mess? Some stuff, what is it that I caused? What is it that I didn't cause? But it's just a problem under my leadership that I've got to address. Because everything rises and falls on leadership. And God has just been, for whatever reason, in His economy, He's been somehow okay to let entire nations suffer because of bad leadership. And in ways I don't understand, He's been okay to let entire families suffer because of poor leadership. And so everything rises and falls on leadership. And so guys, whatever it is, whatever's broken in our marriages, it's our responsibility to make sure that it gets tended to, or not always have a tight little bow, put it around it in a neat little story, but that our trajectory is that we're dealing with this stuff. Okay? May not be your fault, it's okay. But because you're the leader of the home, it is your responsibility. And so I tell the story, you know, I think I've shared it in here. We always tell our pre-married guys, man, they get really spun up on this issue. It's like, dude, if it's her fault, I'm not dealing with it. She's got to fix it. You know, it always comes out. I don't understand with the guys. And so the analogy we give them with is, you know, if I'm in my living room, my kid hits a baseball through the window. And you came over a year later, and I sat in my living room, and there's rain coming through, you know, where everything's kind of weathered. And they go, dude, what's the deal with the window? And I go, well, it was my son. He knocked a ball through that. I'm just kind of waiting for him to kind of deal with it. You would shake your head. You would say some choice words to me, and you would effectively say, dude, fix the window. Man, you are the man. Fix the window. You're the dad. Fix it. It's ridiculous to, you know, ask a 7-year-old boy to go fix a window. That's great. You didn't knock a ball through the window. But dude, it's your house. Fix it. Okay? And it's the same thing, I think, guys, for us. There's stuff that's just broken in our house. Some of it we didn't do. A lot of it we did. But it's our responsibility as a man to make sure that stuff is being tended to. Okay? I think a lot of us have abdicated our roles, and our families suffer the way the nation of Haiti is suffering because of a lack of leadership. Okay? So I've been sobered anew, and maybe guys, you will be sobered anew. And gals, you're leaders in your home as well. But I think there's a primary responsibility to the men. And so guys, lead well. Man, tend to the broken windows or the trash that's piling up on your streets or anything else that's a mess in your world. Okay, it's our responsibility. I was reminded of that this week. Leadership is everything. Leadership is everything. And so guys, lead well. Okay? Yeah, and that's the hope for Haiti. Kyle Kigler is our family ministries guy, and he kind of ran the trip, and he just took, I guess, just that great joy. Everywhere we were somewhere unscripted, he'd always ask me to do something, you know, give these kids a challenge or share the gospel or something, you know, and I was totally not ready ever, but he just thought that was really funny, I guess. So I was in front of, you know, some kids in an orphanage, and he just, you know, classic, hey, get up, give them a challenge, you know. It's like, okay, and so I got up, and but somewhere between the, you know, the back row and in front of these kids who don't speak English to a translator, what are you going to say? And I just grabbed my son, and I said, you know, 1 Timothy 4:12. Why don't you let these kids know what that says? Don't let anyone look down on you because you're young, but set an example for other believers in speech, life, love, faith, and impurity, right? And so I just told those kids, hey, you guys don't have to wait to be older to initiate and to be leaders. You can set an example right now. And the future of Haiti is right here in this room, right? I doubt that once the presidential election runoff happens, that your country is going to change appreciably. But you guys can. I mean, you guys are the future of Haiti. So lead now and lead boldly when you get older, right? You are the future of Haiti. And so, guys, we're the future of our families. The way we lead is going to have everything to do with how our families go, okay? So be challenged, be encouraged. So we're blessed. We need to put ourselves in positions where we need God's power to show up. We need to take advantage of every opportunity. We cannot let our joy be dictated by others. And everything rises and falls on leadership. Okay, so that's kind of still some of the stuff that God's stirring in my heart. Some things are actionable today, and other things that God's just kind of growing me. And so we'll talk about expectations in a few weeks, which are crazy important. But I think a lot of that stuff is applicable to us today.